Welcome to the Scuba Goat Podcast with Matt Waters. Let's dive right in.
Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks, Matt. Much appreciated.
How's the...
How are you
finding the temperature over there at the minute? Because you're away in Switzerland, aren't you?
I am indeed. It's definitely a little bit chillier than what we're used to, for sure. But actually, in all honesty, it's not too bad. It's about 10 degrees today. Cloudy skies, but not too bad. Heading up into the mountains on Thursday, snowboarding for the weekend. So I'm sure that will drop the temperature right off. But it'll also be nice to swap the ocean for the mountains for a bit as well, eh?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a change. Still got water involved, but just a damn sight colder, eh?
Exactly that.
Hey, give everyone an idea of where you've come from. How did you get into diving to start with?
I initially did some try dives back in 96 or 97, I guess, in the Greek islands. Obviously, back in the day where certifications were a little bit less important, so it was very much a, do you know what you're doing? And if the answer was yes, it was, you know, kind of a basic diver, try scuba sort of situation. And I did a few of those. I grew up next to the ocean, so surfed from quite a young age and obviously was in and out of the water a lot. Something that just felt comfortable, felt natural. And then in 2008, decided that, I kind of wanted to continue to travel and stay away. How could I make that work? Was there a possibility to make diving into something a bit more? I kind of went from there. Did open water advanced in Dahab in Egypt at the beginning of 2009. And then met some guys over there that were based out of Koh Chang in Thailand. So I was actually planning on heading back to Australia. I'd been in Australia for quite a bit in 2007, 2008, I guess, something like that.
Yeah.
And they kind of said, you know, why don't you stop in Thailand on the way back to Australia and do rescue dive master and kind of go from there, really. And I guess the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one thing. It's a significant transition coming into the dive industry from the sports that you've done in the past. I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, yeah. I mean, I rode bikes for quite a long time. I had my fair share of injuries. 2008, I lost use of my right arm. So that was, you know, obviously another big reason to try and think about something that I could do to continue the same kind of lifestyle, but obviously with less impact. It's nicer on the body for sure, eh? Like there's, you're not crashing into the floor at 30 odd miles an hour or whatever. But I think, you know, all extreme sports have a kind of tribe, right? Like people stick together. You'll see it in Australia with all of the surfers and stuff. It's something that once people get interested in these kind of things, then yeah, they stick into groups. And I think with the bikes, with the surfing and stuff, like that's a very particular group of people. Whereas in diving, you're exposed to so many different people, so many different backgrounds, different career options, different walks of life, races, nationalities or whatever. And for the time that we're underwater, it doesn't matter if you're a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist. You could be a waiter, whatever. It doesn't matter like that. It kind of, yeah, I guess, bridges that gap and everyone becomes equal for however long it is that you're submerged. And that's nice. It's a wider range of people. Obviously, there's a lot of exposure. You've traveled a lot, obviously, with the diving as well. And you know, yeah, there's probably not a major city in the world now that you could go to without knowing somebody that you've either dived with or taught or whatever. And I think that's something that's very special about the industry. I don't think that it's something that is super common in other industries, maybe.
No, I think you're right there, because it's weird because it's such a bizarre and niche sport. When you compare it to, let's say, the mountain biking, there's got to be more riders than what there are divers in the world. And you would imagine...
Sure, that, yeah.
Yeah, you would imagine that scenario of you know, being well known and being able to go to different locations and know someone through the sport, you'd think that it would be role reversed. But I think it is indeed scuba diving at the top of the list there, because you know, you're right. Wherever we go, there's always someone, even if it's someone that you can't even remember, and they just start talking to you. They're like, oh,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Where was
it? Oh, yeah, of course I remember. We had a great time. Yeah, man. I mean, I think, you know, it's for sure it's interesting. And, you know, there's such a wider age range, right? Like, you know, I mean, you can, okay, not at a certification level for sure, but, you know, you can start diving at 8 years old in confined water. And then I think the oldest person I've ever taught was in their late 70s. So, you know, it's across the board, right? Like, you can have people from a very young age into, you know, into their pensioner years that are still super enthusiastic and very passionate about what they're doing. And for people that maybe have, you know, whether or not it's injury or just bodily wear over age or whatever, once you're under the water and you're effectively weightless, like, a lot of those injuries, a lot of those, you know, maybe bodily woes or whatever become less important. Obviously, condition dependent. If you're doing kind of easy diving, no currents and easy entries and exits and whatever, then it's something that is so much more accessible than, you know, the extreme sports or the action sports that involve us to be in good physical fitness.
Yeah. You know what I do like about it? When you go under the water, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no phones. I'm obviously getting old because I've just had my 50th, but I'm sick and tired of just being in rooms with people that are just constantly on their phone, and, you know, there's no communication. There's more communication, real communication, on dives, you know, and I like it.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, instead of a phone underwater, you've just got a camera that you poke at and look at the screen of and ignore everyone around you. So, I mean, you know, there's a balance to everything, right?
Yeah, true. Fair one. I'll take that one. Hey, speaking of age ranges and all that kind of stuff, I do have to just pause for a second and give a huge shout out to Ollie Carroll. And he's a young lad that came and saw, he dragged his mum along to watch a live presentation with me and Nico, Nicholas Remy, probably a good 8-9 months ago now. But he's 16 years old, and I reckon he's probably the youngest fan of the show, and his mum reckons he'll go mental hearing his name on it. So, Ollie Carroll, you got your shout out, buddy. We'll see you at the next event, and then let's go diving sometime. hey, and yeah, incidentally, Ollie, we're going to go back to what Tim's been doing and how he got into or further progressed his career in the industry. But this is the man that can teach you all the way. If you want to go into the dive industry, you can pop across to Thailand. And when you're old enough, another couple of years, you can have a few beers with Tim and learn how to do it proper. On top of that, Tim, you're the first SSI representative that we've had on the show in 63, 64 episodes.
Really? You're slacking.
No pressure, but we've had Raid, we've had Paddy.
Okay, fair enough.
And now you.
All right. Yeah, well, you know, save the best for last, right?
Yeah. Well, do you want to explain where you sit in the SSI structure now? Because obviously there's different abbreviations for the different kind of rank structures in the various agencies, and just try and give a comparison to the other ones.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, my certification level is instructor certifier, which in other agencies, I guess, would sit at the examination level. So it basically means that I freelance for SSI on Koh Tao in Thailand, which means that once a month, ordinarily, I'm responsible for doing the instructor evaluations along with the full-time team based in Thailand. With regards to that, I think, you know, SSI is a fast-growing agency. Obviously, they've been around for a very long time. 1970 is kind of the birth year, which is very similar to Paddy in time frame. But I think, as we all know, Paddy has been for a very long time, to use their phrase, the way the world learns to dive. Yeah. I started my career as a Paddy instructor. Well, I didn't, but obviously once I got to instructor level, I was Paddy through and through. I crossed over to SSI in 2012. And to be completely honest, at that point in time, I didn't know very much about SSI at all. It was more wanting to work at a particular location, it being necessary. And yeah, I'd very much bought into the Paddy system, as obviously a lot of people do. And it was interesting to transition into something different. once I started teaching the system, I think, you know, the flexibility that we have in the way that courses are conducted, how we can move skills, we can move. Basically, I feel like it's a lot easier to cater to individuals. From my perspective, what makes a good instructor is somebody that is adaptable, and you shouldn't be teaching the same course, you know, just on a script every single time. Based on the diversity of people that dive that we've kind of already touched on, I think if you have the ability to, you know, change the way that you construct a course, change the way that you deliver your information, it should be based on the people that are sitting in front of you. And SSI, in my opinion, gives us far more scope to be able to do that successfully. So I kind of made my way up through the rankings. I did my instructor trainer in 2015, which is, you know, PADI course director equivalent, working alongside Simon Garrity, who at the time was the most certified SSI professional in the world. And, you know, we taught and trained a lot of very competent and capable professionals. From there, you know, I bounced around the world a little bit for a while, dipped my toe back into the PADI pool for a little while, and I didn't feel like I could teach as good a course within that system anymore, based on, you know, the rigidity of how things work in a lot of instances. I then went on to work for Siam Diving Enterprises in 2019. They were in charge at the time, up until recently actually, of SSI International in Asia, also MARES. So I was responsible for MARES, for the equipment sales, both to dive centers and to the retail market as well. But as part of that, I then moved forward and did my certifier with SSI in that time frame as well. So I was over in Phuket with Brian Knight, Neil Francis, Ronnie Kane, who's the head of training for SSI, was there as well. And we ran a big instructor trainer seminar, at which point I did my certifier. So started doing the instructor evaluations back in 2019 with Brian on Koh Tao then. So yeah, that's kind of where we are. I'm only with them now, you know, as and when they need me. It's pretty busy right now. So it's been every month for the last four or five, I guess, now at some point. And then, yeah, the rest of the time I'm at Big Blue.
Yeah. You are. just to clarify.
Blast from your past.
Yeah, to anyone who's listening and thinking about going on to do their instructor certifications, you go through the Dive Master program, then your instructor. So your course directors, or your PADI equivalent course directors, are the guys that teach you how to become an instructor. So you generally have a couple of weeks course with them, and then at the end of the course, you have a couple of days where someone like Tim comes in to evaluate that training that's gone on and to certify independently and say, yes, this person's good enough to be an instructor, crack on, congratulations. So that's just simplifying it a little bit. I didn't realize actually, Tim, that you got to Big Blue not long before me, to be honest. I think I got there in the February of 2013.
So yeah, when was I there? I think I started in October of 2012.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge amount before. Did my crossover in either late October or early November, I think.
Yeah. How did you get there then? Because were you at Crystal as well?
Yeah, I did some work at Crystal for a bit. And then quite a few of the staff that were, you know, very successful at Crystal. It's a great dive shop. It's still a great dive shop. Had moved over to Big Blue, and you know, all of a sudden we're hearing whispers of SSI and, you know, all of the flexibility that surrounded that. So some friends of mine, people that you'll remember well, Guy and Petra, Richard Todd, had made that transition, Nick Bufton.
Yeah.
And yeah, they kind of said, look, you know, Big Blue's looking for instructors. Big Blue was very much on the up at that point in terms of growth. So yeah, I kind of went down and I had a chat with Simon and sort of, you know, inquired as to what all of this was about and what they were looking for. And yeah, they kind of said, you know, if you do the crossover and you fit into the team, it was a big team at the time, and there was obviously a lot of people at that point fighting to go into all of the big dive shops on Koh Tao. Yeah. As you know, and I think this is true of a lot of the dive centers on Koh Tao, if there are course directors in the paddy centers, if there are instructor trainers in the SSI shops, we want to employ the people that we've trained, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, my opinion, dive master training is effectively a 2-month job interview. And if those people move forward into that instructor training and they've made a good impression, they've been professional, they've, you know, shown they're capable, it's far easier to help those people to develop and to move them into the system than it is just to read a CV, which you never really know, you know, when people are telling the truth or if something has been elaborated on, or, you know, do they actually hold the level of certification that it says that they have?
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you know, obviously, to a certain degree, diving is a pyramid scheme, right? Like, you qualify as an instructor, you can teach the base level courses or whatever, then you have to specialize to go into different areas. There's then recognition levels, recognition ratings within SSI. There's, you know, master scuba diver trainer, IDC staff instructor with PADI, and so on. I feel like a lot of these things these days are done through internships. They're done through team teaching. Yeah. And we end up with people with very, very impressive CVs that have effectively never taught a course on their own at any level, let alone at these now elevated levels that they hold these ratings in. And, you know, from my perspective, that kind of dilutes the quality of the market. You know, if you've got an IDC staff instructor rating, or if you've got the equivalent with SSI assistant instructor trainer, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. And just ticking the boxes and signing the paperwork is not something that interests me in any way. I think people need to gain the experience. They need to learn through, you know, through exposure to different types of people. Yeah. Diving's very, very easy when done well with great students, but how do you manage when everything goes wrong, right? Like, it's a straightforward thing to do when everything is going right and people are speaking your native language and they're of a level of intelligence where they understand how everything goes, but that's not reality. I think it's incredibly important that even at, you know, basic diver open water level, we always emphasize to our instructors that there is never going to be any pressure from us to certify somebody that hasn't met the requirement and isn't going to be safe. Yeah. Of course, they should give them more time if that time is available. They should try and continue to develop those skills and make sure that they are comfortable. But yeah, until you know, we can say that somebody is an autonomous diver, they are comfortable and capable to hold an open water certification or whatever level of certification it is. You know, the requirements must be met, and that becomes infinitely more important when you're looking at dive professionals that are then effectively responsible for people's lives every single day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think employing from within, being able to spend time with people to develop, to see whether or not the personality fits, is very, very important for us. And, you know, for you, obviously coming into Big Blue, you did the same route as me. You crossed over. Mm-hmm. And we started at the bottom of the pile, right? And we had to prove that we were good enough, really? And that we would fit in and whatever. And that's something that takes time, and it involves a lot of patience. You know, you'll remember, yeah, picking up the last minute courses when all the other staff were busy, and you know, you end up all of a sudden you've got your first 6-pack open water course, for example, and then someone wanders in and wants to do a paddy specialty, and you're the only person that can do it. So you're running, yeah, around trying to change, you know, your plans and your tracks. And I think 2012, 13, 14, 15, there was an exceptionally capable team at Big Blue, and it was a difficult egg to crack.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked at a lot of dive shops and a lot of locations around the world. I honestly believe that the people that we had at the dive shop at that time were the best I've ever seen.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think, you know, in turn... Ah, well, there you go, Matt. I mean, you know, I didn't want to kind of blow smoke or anything, but there you are. But, you know, having those people around you and having to push into a team of such quality makes you raise your game.
Yeah. I think one of the key things that we had there as well was that people didn't mind if you cherry picked. You could quite happily sit there as an instructor on a boat teaching a six pack, the same as five other instructors that are on the boat teaching six packs. But the more experienced guys would be approaching subjects in a slightly different way to what you probably did yourself. And you could cherry pick from what they were doing and mold it and create your own style of tuition. And I think that's one of the key elements that a lot of people miss when they look at Kotow. And I'm going to broaden that out a little bit to Kotow and get on my little soapbox for a second, because the old adage of armchair warriors that cast dispersion on the likes of Kotow and call them factories. Yes, I'm sure you could call it a factory in comparison to many locations in the world because of the sheer volume of people that go through there. But the quality of the majority of the dive professionals that are on such a location that are teaching all the time, every day, 365 a year, the reason that they're there is because they're bloody good at what they do. And with all of that tuition that they're providing, they're only getting better. Now, that's not 100% of the people, for sure. There are some loafers and some wasters, but quite frankly, in the time that I was on the island, you didn't see them last long.
No, I mean, as you said, I've been in a lot of locations around the world. I have heard, in interviews, during my time in different places, we don't normally employ people from Thailand. And my response to that is, maybe you should.
Yeah.
Because I've worked with some fantastic instructors all over the world. I've worked with some very, very poor instructors, and the poor consistently have been outside of Thailand. I've worked on Koh Chang, I've worked Koh Lipe, I've worked Koh Tao. And Koh Tao, by far and away, have been the best instructors.
Yeah.
They have to be. It's a huge market. There's so many people that are scratching for everything that they can pick up. Post-COVID world, things are perhaps a little bit difficult. And a lot of the people that were of a high level of experience, if they weren't owners or course directors, instructor trainers or whatever, maybe found other ways to make money. And sadly, a lot of those people have not returned to the industry. So it was almost a clean slate. And we pretty much started again at Big Blue. There were, a handful of staff that were still survived through COVID and thankfully decided to remain in the industry and hope for the best. But the way that things are now is somewhat different. There's a lot of newer instructors on the island. There's perhaps less of the kind of middle core, if you like, of the very, very experienced people that were perhaps teaching the dive masters at certain locations and whatever. But for sure, the quality must be high, because there's always going to be 10, 15, 20, 30 people sitting behind you wanting your job. And that should be nothing other than motivation to continue to improve. We're now a team almost entirely of people trained within our training programs, right, in-house. And it's a great atmosphere now. It's a super nice group of people. It's a pleasure to be around. It's a really, really nice place to be again, which is fantastic. And hopefully that continues to move forward. I think if you speak to any of the instructor trainers, course directors on the island, they're obviously going to favor the people that they've spent the time with, that they know things about, they can trust. Words on a page with no backup, how much of it is a reality? I think in that aspect, the quality must remain high.
And that's one of the things as well that I point out usually is that, people say it's crap diving. Well, it's not. Just look at the photos I got last month. I came back for a couple of weeks last month. It's not crap diving. It's not Komodo. It's not Raja Ampat. what it is a safe environment with good conditions for training and tuition. And it just happens to have some epic diving when it kicks off. And, you know, you can't really argue when a whale shark comes through quite regularly just to say hello. But it's all on balance. You know, it's for me, it is probably one of the training meccas of the world when it comes to diving, because it's got everything that you need to be able to learn in a controlled environment that's not going to put you under undue stress unnecessarily. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think on a, you know, as you've said, you've got, you know, your Chumpon Pinnacles, your Southwest, Samran, Sail Rock, you know, on a good day, I would say that they are world-class dive sites. Yeah. For, you know, training perspectives, we have a lot of bay dive sites, which obviously are very, very convenient, and there's plenty of sand for, you know, beginners that potentially are going to touch the bottom or maybe crash into something. Obviously, you know, we're ideal world. Everybody's training now in neutral buoyancy, which is fantastic. But again, let's be real. Not every single person that is going to learn to dive is going to be capable of going straight into neutral buoyancy on dive one. Yeah. So having these locations that, you know, we're not having a huge impact on the environment. You know, we've got calm conditions. Yeah, of course, that's going to make people feel more comfortable. You know, having taught a lot of open water students at this point in my career, I've taught open water students all over the world, and Koh Tao, for conditions and for convenience and for diversification of dive sites that are suitable down to 12 meters, it's great, man. I mean, you've got plenty of dive sites with 12 meters at the bottom. Yeah. So, you know, you discover scuba diving, your basic divers, and so on and so forth. It's set up perfectly for that. There's dive sites with 18 meters at the bottom. There's dive sites with 30 meters at the bottom. You know, all of these things are super helpful. But then obviously you have the option for taking people on, for example, dives 3 and 4 to some of the oceanic dive sites, and starting to practice that buoyancy when there isn't a bottom directly below you. How the courses are set up, how the courses are structured will obviously vary slightly between dive shops. But, you know, absolutely, if conditions are okay, we'll be looking to go out to one of the oceanics for dive 3. You know, obviously understanding how to control buoyancy without direct reference to the environment is incredibly important. And having those options in conditions that are not going to challenge people too much at that level, I think, you know, it's a great situation.
Yeah. I mean, it lends itself to being able to focus on what they really require. And like you say, the buoyancy for sure. You know, if you're in murky, filthy coffee water and freezing your tits off, you're not really going to be bothered about whether you've just kicked a pile of sand or not.
No.
You know, there's too many external stresses there. So, yeah. Anyway, that's my opinion on Koh Tao yet again. if anyone doesn't like it, tough shit. all right, so working past open waters, in fact, you know, let's stick with the island for a little bit. Obviously it's getting back to being busy again. And you know, I saw from a distance, and maybe that one quick spell when I came back, what, 18 months ago for a couple of days, there seems to have been a lot of growth again. Are you finding it hectic there, or is it all, you know, controlled madness? What's the lifestyle like? If someone was to be coming to possibly stay for a while and do the dive master, are they going to be rabbits in headlights, or is it all under control?
Everything's under control for sure. Obviously, I think, you know, those, it's kind of a general question, right? You know, it's subject to the people. From a dive master training perspective, obviously, we like to have numbers around the dive shop. Dive master trainees are, you know, a conduit, if you like, between your open waters, your specialties, your stress and rescue courses, and so on and so forth. I think they're extremely important as a link between students and maybe the instructors and the higher level professionals. They create a good atmosphere. Obviously, they're super enthusiastic about diving if they've taken that step towards, obviously, the first level on the professional ladder. So I think, yeah, the more the more people that we have and the more people that are coming through those programs, the more it then encourages other people to come through those programs. You know, like if someone, depending on obviously the sales tactics, you were, you know, very successful with your continuing education and with your equipment and so on when you were at Big Blue, not everybody is particularly strong in those areas. And you know, I'm sure you've heard, I can't even count how many instructors that I've heard over the years say, well, yeah, but I'm a scuba diving instructor, I'm not a salesman. I disagree. I think that one comes hand in hand with the other. Yeah. And, you know, we've both worked with some very gifted instructors that perhaps weren't the strongest in sales. We've worked with people that are very strong in sales that were perhaps not the most gifted instructors. So building a balance between the two is important. I think people that are doing the professional training, the dive master, assistant instructor, instructor courses, and so on, you know, can have a huge impact on whether or not people actually continue to dive. And from anybody that is looking for a career as a dive professional or has a career as a dive professional, the number one focus for us is to train safe, competent, comfortable divers that will continue to dive within the industry, right? Like, people will argue all day long about which agency is best and which situation is better and whatever. I don't really think that matters that much. It's, you know, the industry as a whole, you know, I could sit here and tell you a million reasons why I believe SSI is the best training agency in the world. You could sit down with a Paddy course director, they'll give you exactly the same reasons why they feel like Paddy is the best. It doesn't really change the outcome.
Yeah.
You know, we want to train high quality professionals. We want to train high quality dive masters, instructors, and, you know, beyond. And their job is to encourage more and more people to stay within the industry and to keep diving.
And do it safely.
100%. I mean, that should be the forefront of everybody's teaching, right? And this is, you know, going back to what I said earlier, we're never going to pressure our instructors to sign the paperwork. People pay for a course. They don't pay for a certification.
Yeah.
You know, the age old analogy of, you know, if you crash a car into a wall during your driving test, are you going to get a license? You're not. So, probably, yeah, not. For sure. People need, well, maybe, I suppose, depending on where you are in the world. You know, people need to understand that the time needs to be given to the students at every single level of training, and that's the instructor's responsibility, in my opinion. But at the same time, it's also the instructor's responsibility to make sure they're 100% comfortable to certify their diver. And doing that in a way that encourages them to continue to dive, that encourages them to you know, stay within the dive community is obviously part and parcel of all of those things.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, going beyond what you get as an instructor or a dive master, when you assist someone who's getting, you know, nerves or has a little stumbling block to get to that goal, if you get them to that goal, the feeling that you get of a little bit of pride and a major satisfaction in assisting someone getting to do something that they thought they might dip out of for whatever fear. I used to love that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, there's a huge amount of satisfaction in helping people to reach their goals, right? And it doesn't matter at what level this is. You know, I've watched open water students that have finished a course and, you know, no matter how amazing they've been under the water, no matter how much they've, you know, developed during the course, it just isn't for them. And then you get people that will struggle every single step of the way and, you know, they're absolutely over the moon at the end. And I don't feel like that stops just when people start diving. You know, how happy people are when they reach every level in diving or any level in diving. And from an assistant point of view, from a certified assistant, from an instructor perspective, surely that's the reason we do this, right? Is to help people to develop, to give people an opportunity to see the 72% that they don't normally see.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So on a day-to-day basis, Timothy.
Yeah.
What are you doing at Big Blue? Let's talk about Big Blue Pro for a moment.
Yeah. So on a day-to-day, I'm responsible for training basically everybody at a professional level within the dive center. So right now we have about 19 or 20 dive master trainees that are within their program. We have a few people kind of primed and ready to move forward into assistant instructor and instructor in the next month or so once I return from Switzerland. Mm-hmm. So when it comes up to the instructor levels, it's me on my own. With the dive masters, we have Fiona, who you know very well, Fiona Campbell.
Yeah.
She's my partner with regards to the training of all of the dive masters. That one was a no-brainer for me because her husband, obviously, again, you know Andy. Andy Campbell's one of the most successful TDI technical diving instructors in the world. Mm-hmm. We have Big Blue Technical Department on site. And Fiona splits her time between teaching technical diving courses and then imparting the infinite wisdom on our dive masters. So we have a much more diverse program than perhaps what is written in the instructor manual or what is written on paper. We want to be able to offer people, obviously, the chance to do everything that they want to do. We're now very, very focused within the shop on specialties rather than, you know, the standard kind of route advanced adventurer program, if you like. And then, yeah, you know, Big Blue Tech is a toy shop full of all these fun different DPVs and rebreathers and, you know, twin set side mount setups and whatever. And having Fiona on board has been a massive help with allowing people to transition into side mount diving, into deeper diving, into nitrox at different levels and so on. So I think that what we can offer is broad. You know, we have people that are teaching, you know, gas blender courses, we're teaching equipment maintenance courses now, everything that people will need to be an active, functional, working dive master or higher. You know, it's not about the bare minimum. It's about offering people every opportunity they can to bulk the CV, to gain the level of experience that will make them, you know, an employable, competent professional.
Yeah, yeah. And it is very much a, it is very much a CV that you've got to pack out, because a lot of operators around the world, when you dream of being a dive pro and being sat somewhere like on the silky sands of Maldives or Papua New Guinea, you need a substantial CV that isn't just diving. You know, you've mentioned the gas blending and filling tanks and, you know, reg servicing, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all of these competencies are what are going to assist you get that job that you want, because a remote location needs, you know, they can't employ five people to do five different jobs. They need one person to be able to do all five and be able to work across the teams. So I like that. I like that approach there, because there was very limited kind of tech introduction for dive masters in the past. That sounds like they've really gone to town in pushing it forward. So to give them an extra leg up, as it were.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think, you know, we've always had the technical department at Big Blue. Perhaps there was in the past a little bit of a, you know, who's going to, it's almost like there was a fight for business. People were coming from dive master training. Obviously the tech department is very, very interested in maneuvering them into technical diving. The pro department was very interested in moving them on to become instructors. And perhaps that wasn't always the smoothest transition. I feel like now, There's a very, very good relationship between the two.
Mm.
And, you know, we sit down with people and we counsel people as to what their options are and what is most suited to them. You know, we're all under the same banner. It's under the same roof. At the end of the day, does it really matter which direction they go in? At some point, everyone ends up in the same place anyway, right? Like most of our instructors now are side mount qualified, are extended range, perhaps. Advanced nitrox divers. So, you know, there are so much more opportunities for people when everybody just gets along and goes in the same direction. And, you know, from an atmospheric point of view, it's just a really, really, really nice environment to be around. And there's so many people now with so many different walks of life, with so many different, you know, levels of certification, levels of qualification. One thing I think that is often lost within the dive industry is, you know, we should be constantly learning. And I very much strongly feel that the day that we get into the water and we don't learn something is the day that we should take a break and get out. Yeah. And, you know, for the new dive masters, for the new instructors, you know, we've got a team of very different levels of experience. And That's not to say that they should be looking at the people with more time under their belts. We've got some fantastic instructors that have been teaching less than a year. But the more people that you can watch, the more people that you can listen to, as you said earlier, right? Like you can start to develop a style that works for you. You might hear somebody say one thing during a briefing or somebody say something different during a debriefing. And if you absorb everything that Big Blue has to offer, you will be very well rounded. It's impossible not to be with the staff that we have now.
Yeah. I picked up there you were on about the advanced adventurer and the specialities. Now, just to backfill that for listening, the norm in the past of years gone by used to be you do your open water and then you stay on to do your advance for 2 days and then you're an advanced diver and you can go to 30 meters, blah, 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 and you go away with two tickets. So I picked up on that because that intrigues me. Can you delve a little deeper into how that's changed somewhat?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, SSI has been the same for a long time in the sense that as a certified open water diver, the Advanced Adventurer Program with SSI is an optional certification. It exists to stay in line with the other agencies and the way that, you know, things have been done in the past. And as a result of that, it's quite a difficult nut to crack because, you know, people do get into the routine of this is the way that things are, right? Like we do open water, we go on to advanced. The Advanced Adventurer Program is built up of 5 adventure dives, one of which it doesn't have to be, but in order to make the certification valid is your adventure deep dive, which, as you correctly said, certifies people to dive to 30 meters. And yeah, as a result of that, after the 5 adventure dives are completed, you get a certification. The adventure dives that you have done within that certification are listed on the back of the digital certification card. And for most people, the 30 meter certification is the motivation to continue on to do that. It's been the same way for a long time. Within the SSI system, as a certified open water diver, you can go directly onto the specialty pathway. And that means that you can spend more time purely focused on areas of interest. I think it allows people, you know, much more in the way of picking and choosing where they feel like they need to develop or perhaps where they want to develop. So for us now, for the last couple of years, we've been very much focused on encouraging people to go down that route. For example, deep and nitrox is a fantastic combination. With SSI, you can combine specialties. And, you know, the deep diver course certifies divers to go to 40 meters rather than to 30 meters. It's also done in a progressive way. So rather than going directly towards 30 meters, perhaps on an advanced adventurer program, things are taken at the student's pace. You know, from a standards perspective, in order to become qualified to 30 meters on an advanced adventurer course, technically you just need to go past 18 meters. Yeah. But from the standpoint of most instructors, you know, they're not going to want to do a 19 meter dive and then certify somebody to dive 11 meters deeper than that. So I think with the specialties, the deep specialty with SSI is a 3 dive program. Dive number 1, the requirement is deeper than 18, no deeper than 30 meters. So you can do things a little bit more slowly. Obviously, there's much more in the sense of academic requirements, of teaching requirements from the instructors. So the knowledge development is obviously there as well. And I feel like people are safer divers when they have more knowledge. They're safer divers when they do things more progressively. So dive 2 of the program, the requirement is to be deeper than 24 meters and no deeper than 30 meters. And the requirement for dive number 3 is deeper than 30, no deeper than 40. Everyone will have a slightly different opinion of that, obviously. You know, when I'm kind of talking about this with instructors, I will always say, right, you know, your aim is 31. Once you get towards that depth, depending on, you know, whether or not anybody has experienced any kind of nitrogen narcosis, any kind of anxiety, any stresses that may be becoming apparent, obviously you wouldn't push any deeper. But if conditions are good, visibility is clear, and everybody's calm and comfortable, then yeah, okay, of course. you can maneuver that dive a little bit further down towards the 40-meter mark. But yeah, let's think about what's going to keep the situation, you know, the safest, what's going to keep people having a solid understanding of the difference between diving at these two different levels, you know, deeper than 18 meters being level number one, deeper than 30 meters being level number two. Safety is always going to be, is going to be the top priority. So, you know, aside from the fact that the training at specialty level is far more comprehensive, there's more time spent in the water actually practicing the skills that are required to do this well. Nitrox, obviously, you know, we all know the benefits, right? So, I mean, being able to dive on nitrox, being certified to dive to 40 meters is a fantastic way to spend the same amount of time as you would doing an advanced adventurer program, but gaining not one but two certifications. Within the SSI system, we also have the recognition ratings, the recognition levels. So there are free certifications for people that go down the specialty route when they hit certain milestones. So specialty diver is the first level. You need to have logged 12 dives. You need to have completed two specialties. And then that will give you a free recognition rating, which will appear within the app, a certification, which then will list the two specialties that you have completed at that point in time. And from there, SSI's advanced open water is four specialties and 24 log dives. So, you know, everyone can, you know, there's no specific specialty that you need to do at this level. There just needs to be four. For us, the most common route is deep nitrox, perfect buoyancy and navigation. You know, I think we can all agree that, that buoyancy is the key to being a competent safe diver. Again, focusing on that in a way where, you know, different equipment configurations can be tried. You know, we have different types of fins that can be used. We've got BCs with integrated weight systems, for example. So allowing people to try different equipment, to try different configurations of equipment, and to purely focus on their buoyancy is a great stepping stone. And obviously, navigation-wise, I don't think anyone likes to feel lost under the water. So again, a more focused approach to giving people an understanding of you know, how to do all of these things safely as an autonomous diver. And again, once people have reached...
Just to interject there. So all the specialities are three dives?
Not all of them, no. So, I mean, without going into too much detail, to keep it simple, we have sort of knowledge-based specialties which have no diving-related requirements. That's things like, you know, your nitrox courses, Reactorite first aid and O2 provider is no in-water requirements. We have... ecology-based specialties now, which are really kind of starting to take off, which gives people obviously a very good understanding of different areas of marine life, of coral identification, so on and so forth. Again, no in-water requirement. There's then open water specialties, which covers things like, you know, your navigation, your deep diving, and so on. We have confined water specialties, so things like full face mask, perfect buoyancy, photo and video, for example, can be done in confined water, bay-like area or swimming pool, no deeper than 5 meters. You know, doing a buoyancy specialty in shallower than 5 meters of water is far more beneficial than doing a buoyancy specialty in the open water, in my opinion. It's harder to control buoyancy, obviously, with less pressure. You know, these are all things that can be adapted to suit the customer, suit the student, based on, you know, what it is they want to do. And then we have things like overhead environments and specialized equipment. So specialized equipment specialties will always have a confined water session, because obviously an introduction to any kind of different equipment, things like DPVs and scooters, things like recreational side mount and whatever, will all have a confined water aspect. And then depending on the specialty, it's between two and three dives for the most part. The new advanced rec program is four dives. But again, you know, these are minimum requirements. So generally speaking, we're always going to add more dives depending on time frame.
Happy days. It's certainly moving on pretty well. And I must add in that I think, again, with the lead towards or the lean towards the tech side of things, it's going hand in hand with what I'm seeing in recreational diving now, with more and more people getting into the technical side of diving. And I mean, you come down to Sydney hasn't when you come here. We'll take you for a dive so you can get cold. And the amount of rebreathers and twin sets that you see is just, it's beyond.
Yeah.
There's not, it's got to be a good 40% of what you see recreational diving is technical setups.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure. I guess, you know, obviously maybe the cold water environment has something a little bit to do with that as well, you know, like if you're spending time getting into different kinds of exposure protection, you're using more weights, you know, there's perhaps a little bit less concern with spending that time to obviously set up side mount, back mount, rebreather equipment and stuff. It's been quite a long time since I dived in Sydney. I think you know how I feel about getting in and out of wetsuits. I'm very much a rash vest and board shorts kind of guy, wherever possible.
Well, just so everyone knows, just so the world knows, Tim and I went to Nusa Penida a few years ago and dived Manta Point because Tim had been very unfortunate and never come across a manta underwater until this point. So we went to Manta Point and it was like 20, 21, 22 degrees, something like that. But this guy, he's like a lizard. The guy's blood just isn't, it's not warm at all. It's ice cold. So 2 5-mil wetsuits and we get under the water about 3.5 minutes into the dive. And if anyone's dived at Manta Point in Nusa Penida when it's going off, it's full of mantas. So we're down there 3.5 minutes in and get this little nudge on the arm. And as Tim's signaling, okay, I've seen a manta, I'm cold. It's time to go.
I'm off. Yeah, you didn't let me though, did you?
No.
It was good. I did stay. It was good. Yeah, it was a good trip.
Yeah. Hey, Scuba Goats, let me share something pretty fantastic with you. A while back, my eyes started to give me some trouble, and it made it hard to focus on my camera screen during dives. I tried countless DIY fixes to attach glasses to my mask, but it made no change to the quantity of blurry images I found in my camera roll. Then I discovered Ozbob Scuba at Sturdy Eyes Optometrists in Mona Vale. Rob Hamilton and his team have been crafting custom scuba masks with precise prescriptions for over 35 years. And I'll tell you this, their mask lenses are tough. I've put mine through the ringer for almost 2 years now, and it's still going strong, capturing awesome shots with virtually no blurry camera roll images post-dive. So, if you're struggling with vision on your dives, check out Ozbob Scuba at Sturdy Eyes Optometrists. Get yourself kitted out, capture some awesome shots, and don't forget to tag me so I can see the results. Stay focused, my friends. The SSI app. Now, let's have a little discussion about this, because, quite honestly, I've never really used it until I was coming to see you guys over in Thailand, and I thought, I better have a look at this, because Tim will bollock me if I don't know how to use it. Thankfully, he didn't ask me about it, but I was impressed by it, and it must make the certification or proving thereof a damn sight easier nowadays than what it was relying on people keeping hold of a piece of paper or a plastic card.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I mean, SSI started to develop the digital system back in 2014. You'll remember the little hub that we had at Big Blue that had all of the training materials and the first version of the app. We'd have to obviously download the materials from the kind of external hard drive onto there. And I think, you know, even from the early days of the app, it was quite intuitive. It was a really, really good idea. Obviously, back in those times, we didn't have the best Wi-Fi on Koh Tao. People weren't perhaps quite as reliant on technology as what they are today.
Yeah.
But, you know, the system now is fantastic. You know, the website and the app work almost seamlessly, I would say, between one another. There's a huge amount of information on the app about all aspects of, you know, SSI system, about all aspects of diving. There's some very interesting, you know, articles about, you know, different dive destinations, you know, what kind of things you can see in different locations around the world at different times. And now, from the perspective of training, all of the training materials, the digital training materials, are accessible through the app. We as instructors can see student progress. It's very, very easy to navigate. SSI are constantly working really hard to update and change the programs to remain current. you know, from a professional standpoint, as long as we, you know, pay our fees every year and we're in active status, we have unlimited free downloads of all of the latest materials. So we're always teaching from the most current, the current materials that are available to us. And it means, you know, that everybody's on the same page. Everybody's teaching from the same materials. And back in the days of, you know, print runs for paper manuals and so on and so forth, it was an expensive process trying to have a library of everything that we needed. And, you know, in a lot of instances, that was the responsibility of the instructor rather than the dive shop. And it was hard going. And now having everything literally at your fingertips, you know, all of the standards manuals are in there. Every manual for every course that SSI has is available through the website, through the app, in downloadable areas, with and without videos, depending on obviously how much storage you want to take up on your device. And it's made things, a lot easier for sure. They're constantly obviously working on the app. There's constant updates. There is, you know, from my perspective, very little about that I would ever change. It works very, very well. And, you know, as you said, from a certification standpoint, everything is in one place.
Yeah.
You know, the digital logbook is fantastic. Dives are now verified via QR codes. You know, I mean, you'll remember the days of having infinite paper logbooks that, you know, either get wet or get damaged or get misplaced or whatever. And this just goes straight up into a cloud. So even if you do lose your device, no problem. You know, you've got a unique login, you've got a unique email address attached to your SSI profile, and that information is always there.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a little bit, obviously, about the specialty diver, the advanced open water recognitions. There's also free certifications when people hit certain milestones with numbers of dives. You'll know that, actually, Matt. You got one recently, didn't you, for your...
I did.
Your 5,000 dives. And I think, you know, all of these things are really nice for people to have, you know, like a lot of the recognition ratings in other agencies, you know, even when you've met the requirements, you still then have to pay for that. It's something that costs you X amount of dollars or whatever for a digital certification. And SSI are giving these out when people have hit these milestones. You know, kind of touching a little bit again on the difference between doing your advanced adventure and your advanced open water with SSI. You know, if you get to the advanced open water level, you have effectively earned a minimum of 6 certifications, because you have the 4 that are required from the specialty standpoint. You're going to hit through specialty diver, which would make number 5. And then once you've got the advanced open water, you've now got 6. You're also going to get, you know, those log dives will go towards the recognition levels, when the first one being Sentry diver at 100 dives, and then you get a, you know, a new free digital certification for that. We all know that there's a lot of certification collectors in diving. People want to see their progress and see how they're moving forward, and I think this is something that SSI have done extremely well within this digital system now, and the way that it works.
No, I agree. I was impressed. And it also, you know, I'm now kind of chuffed, because my little app has got one of my best mates, little Tim Morris, has certified me doing my update on my first day.
Oh, there you go, man. It's taken a while, but there we go.
Yeah, it literally popped through on the app, and it's like, oh, look, oh, it's Timmy's name. Brilliant.
There it is.
Yeah, it was very...
People are now safer around you than they were before.
Definitely. What do you see? What's your long term goals? Because I mean, at the moment, you could arguably say that you're quite near the top of that pyramid. Of there's not a lot of room left to go upwards, is there?
No.
What's the plan?
To be completely honest, mate, there isn't really one at the moment. I think, you know, the focus for the last couple of years has obviously been trying to redevelop Big Blue and rebuild Big Blue, you know, post COVID. I feel like we're well on the way to obviously doing that now. There's still some things that I'd definitely like to achieve within the shop and within the training. Very happy now with the SSI situation in Thailand. You know, we touched a little bit earlier on Siam Diving Enterprises were in charge of that franchise for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. SSI have now taken over themselves, which I think will definitely increase the exposure of the agency and will give us an opportunity to really kind of, you know, try and develop and push forward with how everything is working within Thailand, within Asia itself. So, I don't want to say that I'm static. I have got, you know, a couple of ideas about things that I'd like to do within the next year or two. But for now, the focus is definitely on continuing to grow the Dive Master program, continuing to grow the instructor program, and pushing Big Blue forward with regards to the quality of training that we can offer.
And so that means that you're going to be bouncing between Koh Tao and Switzerland quite a lot then, eh?
Probably no more than I normally do, right? Like, I'm normally in Switzerland for sort of a couple of months of the year. I think we're probably definitely going to be bouncing a little bit more between Koh Tao and Khao Lak. Going to start trying to do some more kind of, you know, Dive Master focused liverboards so that people are, you know, getting to experience different types of diving. Like, we all know that the west coast of Thailand, you know, as far as Thailand diving going, is probably the pinnacle for what we can achieve. Mm-hmm. Obviously diving from liverboards, from ribs, is very different to the way that diving in Koh Tao is done. As you said, with Koh Tao Chai, you're subject to current a little bit more. Koh Bon, similar kind of situation. Obviously there's some deeper dive sites, so if we have the opportunity to, you know, to take the Dive Master trainees, to take the newer instructors off island and give them the experience of diving in some perhaps more challenging conditions, then I think that can only be a positive, right? So definitely looking to kind of bridge that gap between the two a little bit more often. I know that Boots is kind of keen to get some professional training kind of working over there, so perhaps I'll, you know, maybe do an ITC a season or a couple of ITCs a season over on Khao Lak. But yeah, you know, just, I think the COVID reset for me was just a very good opportunity to kind of get things moving forward. You know, I'm sure that you've experienced in all the places that you've dived around the world now and the expeditions that you've run, obviously the stuff that we've done together with the more remote location diving, there's very much a kind of, yeah, but this is how we've always done it attitude, I think.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, kind of hitting that reset button post COVID is a great opportunity to change how things are done and to use the materials that we have, to use the system and the structure that we have to kind of, you know, elevate what we can offer. Not only at a student level, a professional level, giving people a broad skill set, giving people a broad base, you know, being able to offer diverse diving conditions, diverse certifications, you know, different equipment configurations and so on and so forth. I mean, you know, when we were on the liverboard in Khao Lak last month, you know, I mean, I had a problem last day, was it, with my regulators. I nicked Boots' equipment. That's the first time that I've been in a side mount configuration for quite some time. you know, he's diving the monkey configuration, which I've never done. You know, it was nice to sort of try something different and to see how, you know, how the different equipment configurations, how the different setups can impact the different kinds of diving and conditions that we're in. And I think the more that we can step out of the everyday offerings of a lot of the dive centers around the world, the more attractive that is going to become.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, from a training perspective, it's a positive move forward. From a business perspective, you know, how do you make yourself stand out from the crowd? You know, we know there are a lot of very, very successful dive centers on Koh Tao. There's a lot of exceptional trainers on Koh Tao. You know, what can I do to set myself apart? What can I do to set Big Blue Pro apart, to set Big Blue Diving apart? You know, the day-to-day now, trying, you know, obviously very hard to monitor how things are being done within the staff system, how people are teaching the courses, you know, how we can better improve the schedules for the courses, the way in which we set things up to overall enhance the customer experience. And, you know, obviously my focus is to keep people diving at Big Blue. If we want to look at the small focus, but the main focus is to train quality people that stay within the industry.
Yeah.
So for now, that's kind of enough for me at the moment. Not saying that there aren't opportunities out there. I'm always ears to the ground, and you know, there are obviously times when I'm asked to do certain things. As and when something comes up that really tickles my fancy, then yeah, okay, maybe there's a conversation to be had about where I'll go in the future. But kind of looking to you at the moment a little bit to let's get nomadic kicked off again. And you know, like you said, it's been a while since we were in PNG, so
yeah,
it'll be super nice over there. You know, one of the questions that I was looking at from your list was, where is it?
Oh, can you share a memorable diving experience that stands out to you as the best you've had?
Yeah, well, I cursed you when I read that, to be honest. You know, you're probably familiar with this question as well, right? Like, you get people that are constantly, especially newer divers, so what's the best dive you've ever done?
Yeah.
Like, what a horrible question to answer. You know, I think, you know, for everybody, that's a difficult question, right? Obviously, like, being in the industry for quite some time now, we've got, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of different experiences that we've had. But I think for me, the remote location stuff has always been the biggest draw. You know, obviously coming from a situation where I did quite a lot of adrenaline based sports before, diving is not an adrenaline sport to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, finding ways to make that more interesting and more exciting and more enjoyable. And for sure, you know, the remote location stuff is what does that for me. You know, yeah, going to locations that perhaps, you know, very few, if any, people have ever been to is, yeah, the most exciting way to dive. And when you come down to, you know, single dives, I think that's a very, very difficult one. But, you know, if you want a standout, then I think the dive that we did on the Blackjack would be something that always springs to mind. You know, like, yeah, there's not a huge number of people that have ever been there. That was what, a 14 hour round boat trip from one of the most remote locations on Earth anyway.
Yeah.
So, I think, you know, from a standpoint of moving forward and from keeping the industry interesting and from keeping, you know, the passion, if you like, for actually being under the water, it takes quite a lot for me now to want to go diving if I'm not actively involved in somebody's training.
Yeah.
And yeah, those kind of trips are definitely something that would spark my enthusiasm and make me want to spend some more time in the water for sure.
Now, what was it that was memorable about the Blackjack? Was it this magnificent wreck in a beautiful location and white sands, or was it being knocked off your tits at 44, 45 meters?
Well, I don't know about you, but I didn't feel like I had any kind of narcosis whatsoever, actually. I mean, obviously, you know, Boga Boga Village was an incredible place, right? Like, I mean, I would say land-wise, that's probably the most remote that I've ever been, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the conditions were amazing as well, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, it wasn't a difficult dive.
Between the time that I last dove the Blackjack and we went and dived it at the end of 2018, the villagers there, they keep a written log of the divers that come, because they charge 20 kina just as a local fee. But there'd been five divers. So in the 19 months between me diving it and then taking you guys back and diving it again, there'd been five divers in 19 months.
Yeah.
It's just,
I mean, you know, it's the kind of stuff that you want to see, right? I mean, you know, that condition wise, that's a very, very straightforward dive. Okay. There's depth to take into consideration. Obviously, there's still footage right on YouTube.
Yeah.
I think there was a little bit of backlash from some of the dive community about the fact that we were at 48 meters on single tanks.
Yeah, but behind the cameras and all the tanks set up.
Well, exactly. And, you know, this was kind of where I was going to go next. So, you know, obviously, when you are in a location that remote, obviously, ideally, I would much rather have done that dive on a side mount set up with two first stages, two tanks and redundancy. But as you say, you know, people don't see what goes on behind the camera. They didn't see the multiple different tanks slung at different depths. Obviously the planning that went into that dive with groups dropping at different, you know, at different time frames and at different depths, so that there was always going to be, you know, that kind of safety margin for us. And it's, you know, it's very easy to sit behind a keyboard and criticize what people do, but if you don't know the big picture and if you don't know the whole process that went into planning a dive like that, then, you know, kind of wind your neck in, to be completely honest. But, you know, I mean, obviously we spent quite a lot of time planning the logistics of how that dive was going to work and, you know, obviously what you wanted to get with regards to the footage and so on. And you know, like you say, if there's five people in a 19-month period, like, there's got to be very, very few people in the grand scheme of things that have actually done that dive and been on that location. And, yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of wreck diving in general. I love the history behind, you know, how things happened and why things are there. And yeah, for remote location and for, you know, I mean, what, the visibility was as far as your eyes could see at you know, 45, 46 meters. So, yeah, those are definitely the dives and the things that I think stick to memory the most.
Good. I'm glad they do. And just in case you forget them in your old age, it's on YouTube. I'll stick a link in the show notes. Hey, speaking about those questions that I had and put to you, so that's one of them answered. I have another one. Let's see. If someone wanted to pursue a career similar to yours, what advice would you give them?
It's a trap. I think that's a tricky question as well. I think it's incredibly person dependent, right? I also think that there can be a lot of expectation and a lot of, you know, almost, what word am I looking for? I mean, I, you know, from my experience of training dive masters and from training instructors, I think that a lot of people just expect that when they qualify, they're, you know, they're some kind of entitlement or guarantee that they're going to be employable and they're going to get a job. Mm. And I think it's a very fine balance between trying to encourage people to take those steps and to move up those levels in the industry, but also to manage that expectation and to make people understand that, you know, an instructor fresh out of an instructor evaluation and instructor examination is perhaps not the most employable person in the world. So important to obviously to do your research and to spend the time thinking about things like, where are you going to train? Why are you going to train in that location? Who are you going to be trained by? You know, what agency are you interested in? Do you have future goals of certain locations? Because, you know, in some locations, you know, one agency will be much stronger than another agency, for example. So, you know, what do you have to do to get to the end goal? And I think, you know, obviously we know that dive training is not cheap. We know that there are levels and, you know, there are experienced levels that people are going to expect when they are advertising for jobs. And, you know, you were saying earlier that especially in the places like Papua New Guinea, the remote locations, they can't employ maybe five people to do a job that they can expect one person. But then there's also the double-edged sword there, right? As a lot of the stuff that you see on dive jobs worldwide or whatever, it's, you know, dive guide somewhere and they want, you know, a degree in marine biology or marine science, and they want you to be able to drive boats and vehicles and repair compressors and maintain equipment and work every hour under the sun for accommodation and food, for example. So I definitely feel like this is, you know, I mean, no argument, right? Like, you're still in the industry. I've been in the industry a long time. It's the best job in the world, but I don't think it's ever going to make you rich.
No.
So I think, you know, having enough money set aside to complete the training, to maybe go through internships if that's something that's offered in the location that you're in, but also to be able to sit down with people and have an open and honest conversation about what the goals are, you know, what the goals are for the candidates, what the goals are for the future, and how the trainers can help these people get to that point. Mm. You know, in the sense of competition, for example, that it's fierce, especially on Koh Tao. You know, there's a lot of paddy course directors, there's a lot of SSI instructor trainers that are, you know, that are pushing for those people to come and do their training with them. Mm. There are a lot of people on Koh Tao that are exceptionally strong in their marketing. They're getting big numbers every month. My focus is a little bit different. Okay, numbers are great, like that equates to more money, but I think, you know, from the standpoint of being able to develop competent, capable people that are going to last in the industry and going to help develop the industry and Big Blue as a business as a whole is far more important to me than churning out, you know, people that are perhaps a little bit less prepared and maybe, you know, get through their instructor training. They then don't have enough money to get proper visas, to get, you know, work permits and so on and so forth. And it's an expensive process.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, just to be patient and to manage expectation, to keep the lines of communication open with the person or people that are going to train you. And, you know, to understand that just because you hold a level of certification, that isn't going to perhaps set you apart. Mm. You know, think about what is going to make you employable for a training center. What is going to make you valuable from a student standpoint? Is that, you know, something that you can offer the training center, the dive center? Is it something that you can offer as somebody that is an amazing teacher? But yeah, for sure, communication and understanding that, yeah, just because you've qualified as an instructor, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be guaranteed employment straight out of the gate. You know, people need to earn their stripes. And, you know, I think we can all agree that in a lot of instances, there's quite a lot of arrogance in the industry. I'd love it if that wasn't the case, but that's the reality of the world that we live in. So yeah, I think for sure communication is the most important thing, and, you know, spending time with people and explaining what it is that we can offer as a training center, what I can offer as a trainer. And, you know, it's not going to work for everybody, and sometimes it doesn't work for me. If there's, you know, a personality clash or a difference of opinion, maybe I'll sit down with them and say, look, you know, okay, so this is what I can offer you. This is what I'm willing to put in. But I can also introduce you to, you know, whoever down the road that may be a better fit. And yeah. I think if we all work together to a certain degree, then people would get more from the training. People would be, you know, receiving training from people that perhaps suit them in a better way.
Mm. Yeah, I think I'm all for collaboration. I think collaboration is key in so many aspects of our industry. And I'm glad you said that, mate. Well then, yeah. Okay, if you could change anything about the dive industry, careful, or scuba diving in general, what would it be?
Let me confer to my notes. I think probably to a certain point, you know, the recognition that we actually receive. I feel like, you know, we've talked obviously about the expectations that a lot of dive center owners, managers, and just people in the industry generally have, with people being able to do, you know, so many different jobs for often not a huge amount of financial reward. And I think that sometimes it's lost on people that every single program that we teach, every single course that we develop, you know, every single decision that goes into how to set up that training program to give the students and the customers the best possible experience. And, you know, what sets one person aside against the other is, you know, how much time and effort that they put into something. And, you know, I know obviously from the time being a big part of helping Big Blue to redevelop after COVID, it's long hours, it's long days. And you have to be passionate about the industry, and you have to be passionate about what you want from the end game. Otherwise it's never going to work, right? Like, just because the shop has closed, it doesn't necessarily mean that the work has stopped. You know, there's still communication to be made, whether that between staff or whether that be between customers, you know, answering emails, inquiries, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm not saying that my situation is Big Blue is bad at all, but I've definitely worked in locations in the past where there's been an enormous amount of time and effort put in, which just almost seems to be expected above and beyond what the job description perhaps is. So, you know, I think that in the world that we live in now, it's very, very important for us, and especially, you know, for me being involved with the management of a company, to give the staff the recognition that they deserve, and to appreciate how much effort and how much time does go into giving people a very, very strong experience. And, you know, the only other thing really with regards to what I would change, and I know it's not something that is particularly possible, it's been talked about for a long time, is it would be great if the agencies actually employed people or a person in each location to make sure that standards are being followed. And I think, you know, within the SSI system, obviously we have the affiliation program, right? So to work as an SSI dive professional, you must be affiliated to a center. Every center has a quality management system manager. And it's that person's job to you know, make sure that standards are maintained and to make sure that things are being done well. But in any location in the world, you know, there is an element of we'll just get it done in a lot of situations. Yeah. And obviously, you know, we have rules and regulations, we have standards to follow for a reason. And I think it would be great if there was, you know, sort of a higher body that could maybe govern that in certain instances. Especially where service centers are present, or, you know, there are a lot of certifications going on. One or two people that could perhaps, you know, maneuver themselves around the dive centers, jump into the water from time to time, and just make sure that everything is being done in the way that it should be done.
Yeah.
Whether or not it will ever happen, obviously, we'll see in the future. But I understand that, you know, as professionals, everybody goes through the same training, everybody goes through the same system. But I think we've all experienced people do things under the water that make you go, oh, you know, where's your thought process there? So, you know, obviously, it's a big part of our responsibility as instructor trainers and whatever to try and train, you know, the best instructors that we can possibly train. And for sure, at Big Blue, we spend time making sure that we're in conversation with people. If people are doing things perhaps in a way that could be in any way questionable, that's addressed immediately. But that's definitely not the case everywhere I've worked and everywhere I've been. So, you know, kind of a little bit more of a standardized approach to make sure that the people that perhaps are cutting corners are held accountable for that, which will then, you know, minimize the risk a little bit further and minimize the impact of potentially having problems with student divers.
No. Okay, what are your thoughts on ways to minimize human impact on the oceans?
Okay, I guess, you know, again, a very complex question, but I would start with education, right? I think, you know, from an education standpoint, a lot of people have, you know, very limited understanding of the impact that we as human beings have on the ocean and have on the environment. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about obviously all of the ecology programs that SSI now have available. I'd say that's a fairly solid starting point. And obviously everybody that comes into the dive industry as a new diver will be given obviously information during their basic diver open water training or whatever about the impact that we can have. And, you know, obviously the rules that we follow when diving, with the whole minimizing our impact on the dive environment, you know, no touching things, no hands anywhere, you know, not resting on coral, resting on the bottom, managing buoyancy, and so on and so forth. But I think, you know, from my experience of teaching, when you start talking about, you know, the impact that humans have on the environment, people generally seem quite shocked. So yeah, just being able to educate people. A lot of the dive centers now obviously have conservation programs and so on and so forth. And I think all of those things are a very important way of trying to deliver this information to divers. I mean, as far as getting that broader into the community, obviously it's a little bit different. But if we can encourage people to change perhaps, you know, even some basic personal habits, you know, minimizing one-use plastic, recycling at home, you know, any small amount at a personal level is then going to change maybe at a higher level than that. Yeah. So, yeah, making sure that we as instructors, we as trainers are delivering information about what to do to minimize the impact on the environment as a diver. You know, perhaps somebody doesn't know that pollution in a river on one side of the world is eventually going to end up in an ocean on another side of the world. So, you know, how are things where you're from, and what can you do in your daily life, perhaps when you're not on vacation or perhaps when you're not traveling to do your diving? What can you do that will not impact your life hugely but could make a very, very small difference? And I think making people understand that a small difference is still a difference. You know, it's very, very easy to say, oh yeah, but that's not going to make any, you know, that's not going to make a change in the grand scheme of things is a very easy way out. But if everybody has that attitude, there'll never be any change.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think, you know, educating people and helping people to understand how much of a difference we can make and how much a small difference will actually impact the larger picture is important. So yeah, delivery of information is for sure going to be where I would start.
Yeah. 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 And is there a particular conservation effort that you're passionate about? If so, which one and why?
I mean, it's easy to say Blue Oceans from an SSI standpoint, right? Mm. Blue Oceans Initiative is something that we incorporate into every single course that we teach at Big Blue. You were talking about your SSI application earlier. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you open the app and you go into the courses feature, there is a Blue Oceans program, and that program is a free program to take. There's a huge amount of information about, you know, the impact that we can have on the environment, whether it be single-use plastic, whether it be impacting our carbon footprint, how we work, you know, underwater, obviously, with regards to good diving practices. And it's in every single person that has the SSI app and has a profile. It's free to do. It's very comprehensive. It's informative. And once completed, there will be a recognition card or digital certification that appears to say that you've done this. So, you know, offering these things without any cost, I think is a very cool thing to do from the agency. So yeah, we're constantly talking about that with all of our students to try and give them an easy opportunity to you know, learn more.
Best I get on there and have a look at it, eh?
You probably should.
All right, mate. Nearly there. Of the many safety procedures we have in the industry, if you had to choose one as the most important, which one would it be, and why?
I think you've got to start at the beginning, right? So pre-dive safety check. You know, you touched on this earlier. I think that, you know, familiarization with obviously your personal equipment and familiarization with any kinds of redundancy in your buddy's equipment is incredibly undervalued. Very, very easy, especially in, you know, maybe more experienced divers or people that are diving regularly, the checks are maybe often overlooked. And you know, you can go through any scuba diving forum online where people have talked about experiences and problems, and you know, most of these problems occur when people are diving on unfamiliar equipment or they're diving with configurations that perhaps ever so slightly different to what they've used in their training or they've used before. But you know, equally, if not more importantly, what is going on with the equipment of the person that is going to be diving with you is your buddy. So yeah, I think for me, making sure that the pre-dive check is comprehensive, that you understand how every single component of not only your own equipment but the person or people that you're diving with has to be, for me, you know, start at the beginning. Why are we talking about safety procedures underwater when we haven't even completed the one that we can do when we can verbally communicate on land.
Yeah.
So yeah, for sure, familiarization with every aspect of what somebody's using. Where is, you know, the spare air source? Where is the alternate? Are we using, you know, long hose, short hose configurations? What is the situation? And if the familiarization isn't complete before the water, then why are we getting in the water?
Well said, young man. Well said. Nice, easy one for you to finish with. Well, maybe not an easy one. What are your five top bucket list destinations?
I think number one for sure, Raja Ampat. I think that's probably a pretty standard answer, right? More marine diversity in 1 square kilometer there than there is in the entire Barrier Reef these days, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Galapagos, I think, would definitely be up there if I can get over my inherent fear of the cold and whatever.
Mate, you know, it was 27 degrees when we were there this year.
Like I said, freezing. I'll come back with you next time you go, no worries.
All right.
Fiji, I think, would definitely be on the list up there as well. From an Australian standpoint, I'd love to go to the West Coast. I'd love to see Ningaloo. You know, I've traveled the East Coast of Australia pretty extensively a few times, but I've never actually been over to the West Coast. So I think, yeah, for you know, the whale sharks and so on, that would definitely be very much up there. And funnily enough, you know, one of the only places that I haven't dived in Asia is the Philippines, which,
really,
you know, given the amount of time that I've spent in Southeast Asia, that's something that's sort of never happened. So I think definitely on the list for maybe, if not this year, next year, to get out there and do some stuff over in the Philippines as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I've got a few contacts over there for you, mate. And Boots's missus is Filipino as well, so she's got a few contacts too. Yeah. No, you've got to do the Philippines. It's beautiful. We've been talking about going.
Yeah, back. No, definitely interested. Yeah. Well, let me know when you make a plan, and I'll speak to the boss and see what we can sort out.
So, big blue and growth, and putting it back to where it was. Is there goals for big builds and maybe future businesses in different countries?
At the moment, probably not.
Okay.
Not to say that, you know, maybe that wouldn't be a discussion in the future. For now, you know, obviously the focus, as I said, is just to get ourselves in a situation where we're offering the best kind of training that we can, that we're keeping the numbers consistent. Hopefully, obviously, from my perspective, the professional side of things will continue to grow and continue to be successful. You know, you probably need to have a chat with Jim about, you know, what his plans are for if there is ever going to be anything that is, you know, obviously franchised or whatever in the future, or if he's going to expand outwards. But at the moment, not something that I've discussed with him in any way.
Yeah, tip top.
Not too sure.
Okay. Well, let's close out the show. It's time for dinner. I'm having curry tonight. And it must be almost time for lunch for you. Anyone who's interested in looking at training, whether that be open water or dive master or even instructor training, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
To be completely honest, it's probably easier to send an inquiry through the website. So it's bigbluediving.com. The email address is info@bigbluediving.com, and then everything gets filtered from there. So if you want me directly, then it just gets sent on through the main office. But it's easier for me if everything goes through the website, or it goes through the main, because then if I have any problems with the server my end, there's still a backup.
Yeah. And they'll be speaking. Is it Sam that picks up all those inquiries?
Yeah, Sam will be the first point of contact. Yeah. He will distribute everything off into whichever area it wants to go in.
Happy days. I've got to say, I was impressed with that chap. He's a good lad. And
he is, he's fantastic. He's a very, very, very nice guy. He's a great instructor, and he's doing a fantastic job of managing everything for us at the moment. So yeah, super happy with him.
Tip top. All right, Tim. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and starting at season 5.
Thanks, Matt. Very much appreciate having me on. And we'll have a chat about sorting out some more trips in the not too distant future.
Hell yes. Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in, and bye for now.